Bianca Devins, only 17, was starting to make a name for herself online as an e-girl, attracting lots of male followers. One in particular was aggressive in pursuing her. Though she didn't have any romantic feelings for her fan, known as Brandon Clark, they did become friends. But the more time they spent together, the harder it was for Brandon to hide his feelings. When he caught Bianca kissing another boy at a concert, his envy turned to rage, and he killed Bianca in one of the more famous internet murders of recent times.
Killing, missing, hidden. The podcast about bad things.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome into another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, your favorite and the best podcast in the world about bad things. And I am your extremely humble host, Brad, former criminal defense attorney. Like a real one. One that went to trial and took my lumps and, you know, kind of knows how the whole criminal justice system rocks along. I'm happy you could join us today. Getting me up to my recording area was like pulling teeth, but I made it. I do it for you people. I also have fun with it. Just, you know, sometimes the call of the bed is pretty hard to overcome. I'll go ahead and apologize in advance because we got the dogs going crazy downstairs. They've kind of been crazy all day. We've got the kids going up and downstairs. So I expect the quality of this episode to be like a 3.5 out of 10. I'm sorry for that. Now, the good news is we are not doing another incel-based case. But we still have a murder of a young lady. This one's kind of unique because of how much the internet really grabbed onto this case and how much of the murder scene was shared on Facebook, Instagram, and other social platforms. This really became a kind of internet-centered case, so we're going to go through it today. Beyond that, I don't really have any news, so I guess we can get a start on this one a little bit early. Good deal. This is the story of Bianca Devins, who is a 17-year-old girl from Utica, New York. Now, Bianca had a bit of a rough childhood. Her family seems to have been very supportive, from what I can tell, but she suffered from a variety of mental illnesses, including anxiety, borderline personality disorder, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. She kind of spent her teenage years going in and out of hospitals. She, you know, her favorite fantasy was jumping off the roof of their house. Because of these struggles, Bianca became pretty withdrawn and spent most of her time developing a life on the internet or developing a world on the internet. Even though this was never explicitly stated in any of the sources I came across, I think her mental health had gotten to the point that her senior year, she homeschooled. She still got to walk with her peers, but she spent her days at home. So because she spent so much time on the internet, she managed to become a bit of an internet celebrity as an e-girl. Now, in case you don't know, and I didn't totally know because I'm getting old, e-girls is kind of the subculture thing that involved from a mashup of like scene kids, mall goths, and emo kids, but it was all that combined with Japanese and K-pop fashion. They became a thing during the 2010s. E-girls generically are known as cute but innocent, but with while being fairly flirtatious with men online, some are kind of hypersexual in the way they flirt. You know Avril Lavigne? Yeah, think of her as a pretty watered-down version of an e-girl. Doja Cat and Dua Lipa are also in the orbit of these e-girl circles. I've heard the fashion being described, and I liked this, is a little bit baby and a little bit BDSM, if that makes any sense. Generic, you can usually recognize them pretty quick because they'll have pretty outlandish hair colors, either dyed or split dyed. Music is a really important part of the subculture, with most of the music in this culture being focused on things like mental health issues, sadness, the, you know, awkwardness of growing up, things like that. If you do a quick Google search for an e-girl, you'll see what I mean pretty quickly. Bianca, you know, wasn't just this person online. She was a young woman, an old teenager, young woman. I don't know where the line falls in that phrase. But she was known for being very artistic. She was very, very close with her family, and they considered her to be a very loving person. Her online activities caused Bianca to drift towards 4chan and Discord. She was able to find her audience as an e-girl. And lots of people report that she had well over 150,000 followers on Instagram. That number is a little suspect, as we'll discuss later. But she had enough that she felt like she had a little bit of a thing going. Now, she graduates from high school in June of 2019. About this time, Bianca began conversing with one of her fans, Brandon Clark. He was 21 years old and just deeply attracted to Bianca. Like, she was the bee's knees in his world. He didn't live that far away. He lived in Bridgeport, New York, and they're about an hour apart. The two really got along well, you know, through their messages on the internet and whatnot. And so one day, Bianca invited Brandon down to a family gathering so they could meet in person and hang out. And, you know, Bianca really liked Brandon as a friend. And when he came down, you know, he was very polite. His parents thought highly of him, kind of approved him. But Brandon secretly was, you know, pretty deeply attracted to Bianca. And he was trying to maneuver the situation to be one that was a little bit more romantic. But the pair continued hanging out. They went to concerts and, you know, did what teenagers do. I don't know, stand on grass and make old men yell at him. The exact nature of their relationship has been a source of ongoing debate. Bianca always insisted they were just friends. Her mother claimed that Bianca talked about Brandon as if they were friends. There was no hint of any romantic interest from Bianca towards Brandon. However, Brandon liked telling people that they were an item. And some friends claim that whenever Brandon did this in front of Bianca, she would quickly correct him. You know, hey, she's my girlfriend. No, you're not we're not dating. Don't be silly. That sort of thing. Police, when they were investigating this case, kind of developed the opinion that their relationship was borderline sexual based from the social media messages and the DMs they reviewed as part of their investigation. So this may be a thing where Bianca kind of liked the attention of Brandon, but wasn't really attracted to him, which, you know, it kind of makes sense in the world she grew up in, where she's battling these inner demons all the time. She doesn't have time for a boyfriend. She doesn't have really probably have a lot of energy or will to direct in that direction. And so when you have this guy fall in your lap and he's really into you, that's probably pretty flattering and good for your self-esteem. But, you know, it on the flip side, Brandon probably felt a little frustrated and let on. Well, as we'll see, I think that's pretty safe to say. Now, Brandon came from a much different background than Bianca. His household was extremely unstable when he was growing up. His father extremely abusive towards his mother, sometimes viciously so. There was one kind of horrific incident. It involved his father taking his mother hostage for hours, holding a knife to her throat while police surrounded the house. And meanwhile, 10-year-old Brandon's just kind of sitting there watching. This incident ended up Brandon to be placed in foster care. His childhood friend said that Brandon developed a bit of an obsessive personality. He became really focused on Pokemon and Lolicon, which I had never heard of. So we're both learning something new. Lolicon apparently is a form of anime with female characters who are designed to look like prepubescent girls who are often described as erotically cute. A little weird, but I'm not judging, whatever. So, you know, Brandon, it's unfortunate. Bianca has a good life, but is haunted by all these mental health demons. Brandon has a really bad life that causes him to develop some demons of his own. But the two found each other. They were friends. From what I could gather, they had a strong relationship and they kind of helped support each other as they dealt with all the crap that life had dealt them. Now, because Brandon kind of had this obsessiveness to his personality, he was checking on Bianca's social media accounts obsessively, all the time, every day. He arguably became fixated on her. He saved dozens, if not hundreds, of photos of her to his phone and to his computer. And he kind of developed this attitude, according to his friends, that he felt like he had earned Bianca. Like he had this right to her that nobody else had because of how much attention he had been showing to her online. Now, despite Brandon's growing obsession, and in spite of it getting a little out of hand, I think is the fairest way to say it, Bianca continued to hang out with him. Now, many people say she did this because Brandon was always willing to provide her with drugs. He was just a free and easy source for drugs. Brandon kind of acknowledged that this was his role in Bianca's life to his friends. But he said, you know, I'm happy to give her some pot if that means I get to hang out with her. And there's lots of rumors, no proof whatsoever. But rumors that, you know, when Bianca would have her fill of whatever drugs Brandon had on hand at the moment, should she happen to pass out, Brandon may have taken advantage of the situation. But again, there's no evidence to support these rumors. On July 13th, 2019, Bianca and Brandon traveled to New York City for a concert. Now, when they arrived, to Brandon's great dismay, one of Bianca's followers/friends was also at the concert. And he was there and greeted Bianca. This dude's name was Alex. And Bianca, of course, invited Alex to join him, which caused Brandon to become kind of overwhelmed with fury, but he managed to keep his feelings in check. You know, he wanted this to be a Brandon and Bianca moment. He didn't want this Alex dude around, but he tried to play it cool. And Bianca was pretty liberal in saying, hey, let's go back to Brandon's car and smoke some weed. You know, he didn't want to share his weed with Alex. He brought it down for Bianca. And so it was just kind of tense from Brandon's perspective. During the concert, things only got worse from Brandon. Bianca and Alex, they either made out during the concert or Bianca kissed Alex during the concert. And at that moment, Brandon kind of froze. And he realized he was a third wheel on this date that he had kind of helped arrange. You know, and he felt betrayed. He was smitten with this girl. He had done everything he knew to get her to like him. And she's making out with this random dude. Frankly, you know, the concert couldn't end quickly enough for Brandon. And his night with Bianca was just totally ruined. When the concert ended, Alex and Bianca said their goodbyes, and Brandon walked his desired girl back to his car. When they got there, it was late, and Bianca said, "Hey, I'm going to take a nap in the back seat if that's cool." And so Brandon was kind of left to chauffeur her back to Utica. And this gave Brandon a chance to be alone with his thoughts. I don't dare say that he was thinking clearly, but he knew what he wanted to think about. And, you know, he was just going over and over about who was he in Bianca's life. And he just couldn't accept the fact that she had absolutely no feelings for him. You know, Brandon knew that she liked him. But then she's kissing this other boy right in front of him. And now, instead of hanging out with him and spending time with him like he wanted on the drive home, she's asleep in the back seat. So, I know this is a true crime podcast and this is a serious situation, but I can't help think of The Simpsons at this moment. And it's the infamous episode where Milhouse is going really hard for Lisa. But Lisa develops a crush on the bully, Nelson. And the conversations Lisa and Milhouse have, to me, are just hilarious. But my favorite being, they're at lunch, and Lisa describes Milhouse as a friend, kind of like a big sister. And she says, "Hey, will you give this note to Nelson for me in class?" And he kind of, you know, moans like, "Ah, I don't want to do that." But then it goes to his, you know, thought bubble. And he says, "When she sees that you'll do anything she asks, she's bound to respect you." And so then he changes his answer to, "Of course, what are big sisters for?" And things get worse from there. But anyway, I kind of got that vibe from Brandon, like, the nicer I am to her, the more I'm willing to put up with her nonsense, eventually she's going to fall for me. And it doesn't happen like that, generally. You know, this isn't an 80s coming-of-age movie. Well, as Brandon's going over this in his mind, it's late, he's had drugs, they've been out partying, they've been at this concert, and he's been deeply hurt. He gets really, really frustrated and he pulls over on the side of the road. They're not on an interstate. They're on some two-lane road headed back to Utica. And he just pulls over on the shoulder. And it's in a pretty isolated area. They're surrounded by nothing but woods. And basically, he's going to call Bianca on her crap at this moment. So he's on the shoulder, he gets out of the car, he goes around to the back seat, opens up the door, wakes up Bianca and says, you know, "What's going on?" And, you know, he was really angry when he confronted her. And Bianca apologized. And she was like, "Dude, I wasn't trying to hurt your feelings, but I've made it clear from the get-go, like, you're a friend to me, you know? You're a big sister to me." To pull the Simpsons reference. And, you know, they talked for a minute, but eventually Brandon just snapped. And he goes into a rage. You know, the idea of her leaving him for other boys after everything he had done for her, it was just too much for him to handle. Bianca was his. He had claimed her in his mind, and nobody was going to take that from him. So he began attacking Bianca, you know, just striking her over and over again in the back seat of the car. She tried to resist, but Brandon, like, kind of went into this crazy rage and was almost unstoppable. It's like he was possessed by some evil entity. And Eventually, he just lost all control and he pulled out a knife he had hidden in the back of the car. And he just went after Bianca. And particularly, he focused on her neck. And he just slashed at her throat over and over and over and over. Now, this all occurred in the backseat of the car, and no one's quite sure the order of events after Brandon killed Bianca. But it seems like Bianca was removed from the car and placed on a tarp. Brandon looks down, realizes he's just soaked in Bianca's blood, and he just paces on the side of the road before calling his parents and scared them. He basically told them he loved them, but he gave this real suicide note sort of vibe in the conversation. Like, you know, this is going to be our last time to talk, so I just want to tell you I love you and I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. He did something almost unthinkable after this. And it's one of those, it's like, when you're reading this and when you're trying to make it, you know, somewhat G-rated, you look at this and say, do you really want to include it? But it's such a key part of the story, I don't know how you can't. Brandon started taking selfies. Not just of himself covered in Bianca's blood, but he started taking selfies of himself with Bianca's body. And then he would take pictures of just Bianca's corpse. And he uploaded these pictures to social media. And they had captions such as, thanks to everyone that was good to me, I'll miss you all. And I'm so sorry, Bianca. And on arguably the most gruesome picture of Bianca's wounds, he posted, quote, you're going to have to find someone else to orbit. Meaning her followers, her male followers that were following her but not interacting with her, they were going to have to go elsewhere. Apparently that's referred to orbiting in this world. Now, I understand Bianca's was nearly decapitated in this assault. And so, I haven't seen the crime scene photos. I don't really want to. But I can only imagine how horrific this must be to see pop up on your Instagram or your Snapchat if you're scrolling through and you can't sleep at 2 a.m, you know? Brandon then just took it up a notch. He started posting these really just cryptic and weird videos on Instagram. In one example, he showed his view from his dashboard as he drove home with the caption, here comes hell, it's redemption, right? He also changed his Instagram bio to read October 6, 1997 through July 14, 2019. Clearly indicating that he intended on dying that night. Now, that footage of the view from his dashboard was apparently not from that night because he never left Bianca's side. By 7:20 in the morning, police had been contacted by multiple people who had seen Brandon's postings and said, you know, there's a murder being posted online. We need y'all to do something. Brandon even called the police himself, saying, I've just killed my girlfriend. And he gave them his location. When police arrived, Brandon was laying down on the tarp next to Bianca. And as they slowly kind of approached the scene, Brandon sprung to life and just started stabbing himself in the throat. Of course, the police stopped him from doing this. And Brandon would end up surviving. But what's crazy, while the dude's slashing at his own throat with his right hand, his left hand's holding up his camera so he can live stream all this to Instagram or whatever. Nearby, police found a spray-painted note that they took as a suicide note. It read only, may you never forget me. While he was in the hospital recovering, police formally charged Brandon with second-degree murder. Just to clarify this, I know in real life I get asked this a lot. In most states, and again, I practice in Alabama, so I'm going to tell you Alabama's law on it. But I think this is pretty close to universal because it comes from a U.S. Supreme Court case. The only way you get first-degree murder or capital murder is if you're committing another felony while in the act of committing murder. So if you're trying to rob somebody and you shoot them and kill them, that's two felonies right there, the robbery and the murder. That would qualify you for capital murder. If you're raping someone and kill them in the process of committing the rape, again, two felonies, the rape and the murder, that would allow you, the state, to pursue the death penalty, assuming your jurisdiction has that. Here, all we have is the murder. Just one felony. So the best he can be charged with is, in New York, second-degree murder. Now, what's creepy about all this, okay? Here's Brandon. And, you know, I've painted him, I don't think unfairly, as someone who's just obsessed with Bianca. He would do anything for this girl within reason. And, you know, he feels really betrayed. And so that's why he acted out. And, you know, no, we don't support that. No, that's not healthy or mature. And there's no reason for somebody to lose their life over this. But you can kind of understand it. What, you know, these are younger people. Your emotions can kind of overtake you. Heat of the moment sort of thing. Maybe that makes sense, right? All right, well, we're going to take all that away right now. Police found just in the trunk of Brandon's car multiple knives, rope, and various tools that were never clarified on, all suggesting to police that it was only a matter of time before Brandon was going to kill Bianca. When they looked at his computer, when they looked on his phone, guess what they found? Searches like, where's the carotid artery? How can I choke someone to death? How do you hang someone? Bianca ended up being buried on July 19th. The following Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2020, the community held, instead of a Valentine's Day festival, they called it a B-Day festival in honor of Bianca. And at the little civic center or town hall or some gathering spot, they held a Bianca art show where they showcased a lot of her works of art. And they also had local designers make some of the fashion designs she had sketched out. And so they had a little runway model. Really, really a sweet way to memorialize this girl, I think. That's really cool that they did that. Now, that's out of turn here because we still need to talk about the murder a little bit more. But I wanted to throw something heartwarming in there after that nastiness. So this case spread, or these pictures of Bianca spread like wildfire on the internet. Everybody, it seemed like everybody who got them, who kind of had a little bit of darkness in their heart, was eager to share these pictures. In fact, several members of Bianca's family learned about her murder from Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat. Her stepfather was a particular source of internet harassment. He was emailed these photos all the time, constantly. And of course, they're being sent in deceptive ways. So he thinks he's opening up an email about his power bill, and boom, there's a picture of his dead stepdaughter. It actually caused him to start suffering some sort of trauma where he was kind of paralyzed by flashbacks of the night that Bianca left. He was overcome in guilt by letting her go. It was just bad. The internet companies didn't really help matters. Facebook was probably the most proactive. They took all the pictures of Bianca that had come through their world, and they have a way of marking photographs as totally inappropriate so that they're automatically deleted if they're posted on Facebook. Instagram, however, left Brandon's account up and open with all these pictures and the videos he did for 4 days before they shut it down. So if you were some sort of, you know, gore hippie who wanted to follow this, you had 96 hours to access Brandon's account after he posted all this, these horrible pictures. When people reported the pictures to Instagram, Instagram's response was, "These pictures do not violate our terms of service." Surely that's changed by now. Surely somebody with half a brain over at Instagram has said, you know what? Having a teenager being slaughtered, we're going to say those pictures aren't the look that Instagram's going for, you know? Good Lord. Despite Facebook's efforts and despite Instagram's grudging efforts, users of both platforms reported being able to find pictures of Bianca months later. Brandon ended up pleading guilty. I mean, he had no defense. He did everything but record the actual murder and post it online for the world to see. His sentence, or he entered his guilty plea just days before Valentine's Day, just days before the B-Day celebration. COVID, you know, delayed sentencing for what felt like forever to Bianca's family, but finally, he was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole for at least 25 years. At his sentencing hearing, he expressed remorse. He said, you know, Bianca didn't deserve that. I've harmed so many people. I've hurt her family. I can't begin to offer a big enough apology or any sort of explanation for this. However, shortly after he was sentenced, Brandon filed a motion to withdraw his guilty plea, claiming that his lawyer had bullied him into accepting the deal, which happens far more than you can ever imagine. So many attorneys are scared to go to trial, and I don't know why. To me, it's one of the funnest parts of being a lawyer. But they will just force a plea down their client's throat. And allegedly, that's what happened here. And shockingly, Brandon was able to produce enough evidence to convince the court that, yeah, his lawyer really twists his arm on this. So it wasn't until March 16th of 2021 that he had his final sentencing hearing. This time he accepted another plea deal with another lawyer representing him, and he got a straight 25 years in prison. In the aftermath, there was this real struggle by the media to make Bianca's murder mean something. You know, it couldn't just be this act of rage. There had to be more to it. So they, you know, tried to paint the e-girl and e-boy communities in a bad light. They tried to do everything that they do whenever, you know, they don't like something that's happened. One criminologist was interviewed, and she offered an interesting opinion that I kind of buy into. She believed that Brandon, you know, went through this night at the concert, seeing the love of his life kiss another boy, and he just couldn't take it. He felt like he had been emasculated. And so this, you know, him confronting Bianca, beating her down, and then slashing her across the throat 100 times or whatever it was, that was his attempt to show his strength. And it was important to him, according to his criminologist, to publish this to the world so that they knew that Brandon was strong. He was not weak. You know, as I said, the media really tried to work the internet angle of this story. And back at the beginning of the episode, you know, I noted that it's reported she had 150,000, 160,000 followers on Instagram. That's not true. It seems, if you read the local reports of Bianca's death in the first 24 hours before it became a national story, they were reporting that she had about 2,000 to 3,000 followers. But in the aftermath of her death, and when it became a national sensation, all of a sudden people started following her account like crazy. And I believe the local papers when they say that she really didn't have that many followers, because apparently she only ever posted 10 pictures onto her Instagram account. So it's hard to imagine that you would gain that sort of following from just 10 pictures. She gained the following, at least in my opinion, from the reports of her murder, from her being talked about on the local news. And, I mean, this is kind of dark to say, but I have no doubt that some of it was related to she was a cute girl, so some people wanted to look at her. Especially in the e-girl world, you're going to get everything from just girls being flirty to girls, you know, going topless. It can be, again, I'm not deep in this world. I know that disappoints y'all. But that's my understanding of it, at least. Now, we're not done with the wild turns yet. We've got one more. In July 2021, after Brandon's been shipped off to prison for 25 years, the Devon family ended up suing the district attorney. Now, why would they do that? The DA hasn't done anything wrong, right? Well, they may have done a little bit wrong. See, because the story was so popular and was so famous, a lot of people were interested in maybe doing a documentary on it or a miniseries or what have you. So you had, you know, the Discoveries and the TLCs and independent producers all coming to the DA saying, hey, we're going to do a story on Bianca. Can you share some of your case file with them, with us? And that's not uncommon. There's a lot of things, especially things that were going to be used as evidence at trial, that are generally considered a matter of public record. For some reason that I cannot fathom, the DA shared their folder with them and included in it pictures of Bianca's body, dead body, pictures of from Bianca's phone of her naked that she sent to pictures of some of her followers, and allegedly a video of her having sex with the guy. How is this different than distributing child pornography? Bianca was 17 at the time. Why are the district attorneys or lawyers who know the law, who prosecute people for doing this very same thing, why on earth do they think it's okay to do this? Now, to me, sadly, the Devon's lawsuit was dismissed on kind of a technicality in September of 2022. They filed it in federal court, and the federal judge said, look, you just haven't given us a recognizable cause of action. You know, you can't sue, you know, there's that old saying, you can sue anybody for anything. And what that means is, yeah, you can always bring a lawsuit. That don't mean it's going anywhere. And one of the things you have to do is show that what you're suing over is actually a tort. It's actually something recognized in the law as being something that will support a lawsuit. And, you know, every state's different. Every state is different. In Alabama, state court, this may have worked because we have a law in the books that says any felony can support a civil action. So if you get robbed and the dude goes to jail and you want to sue him, you can still do that. Federal courts apparently don't have this statute. I didn't do a lot of civil work in federal court, so it's something I've never researched. I'm taking this just off of the grounds of the article I read. But because of that, nobody in the DA's office suffered anything because of this. It was just kind of, okay, well, let's try not to do that again. And to me, that's one of the most disturbing parts of the story is, I mean, these are parts of the case file that the family didn't have access to, but they're giving it to media sources. I don't know. To this day, the Devins family, of course, suffers from the loss of Bianca. They still get random emails from trolls who just delight in sending these horrible pictures to them. Again, her stepfather is just continuously haunted by this event. He has these flashbacks and panic attacks. Her sister stopped going on the internet for a year after Bianca's murder and to this day does not maintain a social media account, just in an effort to try to avoid dealing with any of this horribleness. I mean, this is a crime that's had a devastating effect on Bianca's entire family. While certain heartless souls on the internet just love poking Bianca's virtual corpse with a stick. It's disgusting and sad. All right, I don't have a ton of analysis for this one because everything's so cut and dry, but there are a few things I want to touch on. Apparently, a lot of people online have tried to liken this case to Romeo and Juliet, and I think that's such a terrible comparison because Romeo and Juliet, two teenagers that loved each other, and because of their love, ended up killing themselves. This is just a brutal murder. Brandon can spin it however he wants. His supporters can spin it however they want. But the fact is, Brandon didn't attract Bianca. He got mad when somebody else did. And the only way he knew how to handle it was to beat her and stab her to death in the dirt of a highway at night. It was nothing but a selfish and depraved act. There's nothing romantic here. Nothing. Although, you know, in fairness, I've never seen the allure of Romeo and Juliet as that sort of romantic relationship either. What bothered me most in researching this one is I don't know if Bianca was ever happy. And that's not here nor there for the purposes of the episode. But it just bothers me that I don't know if she was ever happy. You know, I get the impression that she chose to become an e-girl just to get some degree of attention and control in her life. She wanted the world to see her in a different way than what she saw herself, I think. I also found it shocking that in all the reports I read and of how this crime so deeply affected so many members of the community, there's no talk of Bianca's friends coming forward. Every time I said friends in this episode, I was referring to Brandon's friends. There's not a single picture posted online that I could find of Bianca hanging out with friends. I mean, even her relationship with Brandon seemed to be based on her desire to have easy access to drugs. Now, having said all this, I never found out much about the Alex character that she kissed at the concert. Maybe they were friends. I don't know. But, you know, even though there's a question about whether or not Bianca had a single friend in life, this community still really rallied around her family, tried to support them, and just tried to make this miserable situation a little bit more bearable. And again, I just want to stress, if you do your own research, you're going to see how Bianca was this, you know, internet star. It's overblown. It's not true. She had her small little niche of followers, but I don't think she was huge. I mean, we actually, Killing Missing Hidden actually has more followers than she did. And I know you're not supposed to talk ill of the dead, and I'm not intending to. I'm just trying to put things in perspective. Now, again, I talked about this case was so popular on the internet. And I believe that's due to a few factors. You know, first, it's not common to have a killer like Brandon who posts photos and videos of his crime online for others to see. The continued harassment of Bianca's family by some of these jerks on the internet adds to it. Her being this budding e-girl who would, you know, willingly travel into what many view as kind of toxic circles of the internet. That probably has some allure in the story. But I think it has to be the photos and videos that are so deeply rooted in the internet now that are the main reason for the media attention. You know, it's easy access to the blood and guts that so often news programs want to show. Now, again, community, super, super supportive of Bianca's family, to the point that when it became apparent that every time you typed in Bianca Devins, you were going to see these pictures of her death, there was this massive movement started by people in Utica that spread across the internet to try to bury these pictures. And instead, people were posting pictures of pink clouds because Bianca really thought pink clouds were very pretty. And they use the common hashtag, Pink Clouds for Bianca. And so if you search now, you'll find lots of pictures of pink clouds. And that makes me feel good. It's nice to see people, you know, taking a stand for just what's good and right. I have to take a moment to absolutely scold the DA's office in this case. How can you think that releasing videos and photographs and photos recovered from Bianca's private computer and providing them to random television companies and documentary producers, how is that smart? Why is that a good idea? A murdered child's crime scene photographs should not be handed out like candy. I mean, this is almost endorsing murder. I get that, you know, okay, arguably some of these pictures are going to be used in evidence, blah, blah, blah. Well, they never were. Okay? And so there's no reason for you to go out and make them public record now. I mean, I just see in my mind the DA's office, you know, every time somebody in the media walks in saying, hey, we got some really cool pictures if you want them. These aren't neat photos from, you know, a ski trip to Aspen. This is a teenager who was brutally murdered. And no one in the DA's office thinks about this. This doesn't bother any of them as they're handing out these pictures. I'm really disappointed Bianca's civil lawsuit didn't go anywhere. I wish... you know, I get everybody loves to talk about tort reform and how we think there's this just this horrible problem with people being sued for everything. These people deserve to get sued. If you're showing a 17-year-old's naked body to random people, that's a crime, first of all. Under federal law and New York law, that's a crime. But, if, you know, of course the prosecutors aren't going to prosecute themselves. Nobody stepped in to do anything. I kind of think this is one of those cases that most people should remember because of how quickly this relationship between Bianca and Brandon turned sour. You know, I kind of think this serves as a tragic warning for teenagers about building relationships with people you barely know. You know, I'm not a dad who scares my kids. I don't want them to raise up scared of the world. And, you know, I think all teenagers go through at least one episode of unrequited love. But, you know, I have had to talk to my kids about if a girl's digging you and you're not digging her back, you got to keep some distance. You got to make sure you don't lead her on. There's just an inherent danger, not necessarily murder, but even if it's just to your reputation, there's a danger in hanging out with a girl that you don't intend to date. And I don't want my boys to do that. And I mean, this is obviously an exceptionally extreme example of that. I'm in no way blaming Bianca for what she did. She was young. She didn't make a smart decision. But we all make stupid decisions when we're young. And it's just devastating because her, you know, not so great decision led to her death. So, again, really bad case, but I felt like it needed to be covered. We needed to talk about it because of that fact. This is an example of when things can go horribly wrong out of the blue. And I think a lot of people, especially younger people, can take something away from this. So, all right, let's do our palate cleanser and try to end this one on a happier note. Now, good news. Nobody in my family picked this palate cleanser. This was sent to us by listener Marzan, who really deserves her own hour of praise. This woman sends me funny stuff all the time through Instagram, and I appreciate it. And like, I feel bad because I can't always get to the things she sends me quick enough. And I don't want her to think that I'm ignoring her stuff. It's, you know, life. But she sent this joke in, and I thought it was a good one. I thought y'all would appreciate it. So here's what we've got, okay? Three moles are working their way through a tunnel that's rumored to lead to a bakery with an untold number of goodies they can eat. As they march forward through the cramped space, the first mole gets excited and says, "I think I can smell sugar ahead." A few moments later, the second mole stops and sniffs and gets excited and says, "Cinnamon? I think I smell cinnamon." A few moments after sniffing, the third mole grunts in frustration and says, "Seriously? All I can smell is molasses." Some of you may have to think on that one for a second. I thought it was cute. I think it's a good one. Thumbs up to Marzan for sharing that with us and for all the other funny things she sends into my life. All right, and we're going to wrap this up as we typically do. Thank you for joining me. Thank you always for joining us. I, you know, constantly sing y'all's praises about how amazing you guys are as listeners and as fans of the show. And, you know, I do have people occasionally ask, how can we help out? Well, you know, the simplest ways, and y'all that are longtime listeners have heard this a million times, but I'm going to say it a million more. If you want to help us out, share the show with your friends. Share the show on your social media accounts. subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher. And please make sure to leave a lovely little 5-star rating and review. This is most impactful on the Apple Podcast site, but anywhere you can do it, we appreciate it. These are all free ways, low-effort ways that you can help us reach more earballs. Now, if that's not enough for you, and if you really want to show your devotion, then we've got our KMH Plus subscription, okay? This costs all of $5 a month, and you get roughly 2 episodes a month that are just for y'all. They're locked away from the common riffraff, and you get to enjoy... It's like flying first class, but with me as your pilot. No, it's not like that at all, because this it's not terrifying. But it's nice. I don't know. It's like when you go buy donuts and you get there just as they're pulling out a fresh batch. So, and you know, I'm making this sound like kind of a threat in a way. I don't mean to, but maybe I should. You know, maybe I should just release episodes at a furious pace until y'all start paying me to slow down. I hadn't thought about that as a business model. But anyway, if you're interested in joining, the link's in the show notes. And, you know, understand this is a one-man operation. This is all me. I do the research. I do the writing. I do the recording. I do the editing. I do the posting. I do the marketing. So, you know, I'm not some well-funded corporate plastic shill. Independent artist right here, baby. You know, damn the man, save the empire. So yeah, I'm way off track. So I'll just stop right now and say thank you all, my hungry little moles. I hope you have an amazing week and get cramps in your cheeks from smiling so much. How's that? Wouldn't you like to be so happy that it hurts to smile? That's what I want for you. I'll return next week with another tale of interest and maybe, just maybe, a special KMH Plus episode might rear its head later this week. Until we talk again, Brad out.
You survived another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, the podcast about bad things. Join us next time for another true and thrilling story.